It's like if you want to cover this building with polycarbonate.
Yeah, well, no, I was looking more for a local place.
And I,
So did you go to any of the shows?
Many of them, they'll scan and the three or four other.
Well, yeah, I would be, I told them there's very much to be some process here going through.
Sure.
But it will be done this year.
Yeah.
And among others, we'll be winning the voters from here, but we'll allow for some of the city. Now, that means also the relation, be allowed to touch and inspect any ballot. And the answer really from the folks who control the county and the security office, you know, we're not going to hang around a lot of areas where we're able to go. And the bond counsel.
Anyway, just kind of fascinating that there's a hanging chair, we don't have chairs. Once the job becomes final, I'm just, I leave it to Mary Ann, who's an expert on this stuff, but in special credit, the public has two choices. One is they can come down and look at the peruse, the original starting of the landscape, or they can ask for the copies. And either way, when you kind of think about it, there's a heck of a lot of albums. So they have to be cataloged. So I think this is whatever the mechanism is for maintaining them, so that they can be available. Obviously, we can't hand you three boxes and say,
hand these back.
Get
is that you can scan in and scan more now?
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you.
But we probably won't check them out for you to take home.
I can see that dropping in the drop in the wrong place.
Report on the April 11th, 2012 regular meeting closed session. John?
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, and members of the audience. The board did adjourn to closed session towards the end of the meeting as one of its last agenda items. So it's been the policy of the district to report back out of closed session at the next regular meeting regarding that. There were two items on the April 11th closed session agenda, both of which are authorized pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9. Those two cases being the Santa Maria groundwater adjudication and the associated appellate court case, and the other one being the Napoleon Community Service District versus the county. This is inclusionary housing litigation. In both instances, the board did hear an update from legal counsel but took no reportable action.
Our next item.
Thank you, President Harrison. We actually have Commander Taylor on for a presentation, and I know he's normally with us and didn't know if he's ready for a presentation.
Good morning.
Morning.
First thing I've got to report is that the last 6 weeks we had seen a rash of vehicle burglaries in the Pomo, both on Dan Street, Price Street, and then we had experienced some over on Division. On April 2nd, an owner of one of the vehicles that was being burglarized caught two subjects in his car and went out to stop them, and one of the subjects hit him in the head with a bottle. The fight created enough noise that some neighbors came out and they helped the victim, and they wrestled a 19-year-old man by the name of Nolan Maddox to the ground and restrained him until deputies arrived. Our station detective started working that particular case following Maddox's connection, and they were able to identify the other subject and take him into custody. He was identified as Brandon Selkin, also 19 years old, both of them from the Pomo. Subsequently, they were able to get some of the property back that they had not disposed of through fences or trading for drugs. So since those two have been arrested, we've seen a complete drop off in the vehicle burglaries, so I think we got the right two people. I had a meeting on Monday with representatives of Rossi Enterprises, Miller Event Management, and Otter Productions regarding concerts at Black Lake Golf Resort that are going to begin. The first concert is going to be in Los Lobos. There'll be two other bands, and it'll be on Sunday, May 6th. They were hoping to sell 1,500 tickets, but they sold less than 1,000, which they said is soft, but they're going to go ahead and have the concert anyway. I was in attendance along with representatives of CDF, and the whole purpose was to look at their emergency plan and make sure that they had adequate security, and probably more appropriately, adequate EMTs, and would be able to get in and out with emergency services. And the plan seems to be sound. The battalion chief, who was acting as the fire marshal, did express concern with some events that had happened at Avalon Bay Resort in the past, and indicated that the county and he are contemplating limiting outdoor events to 1,000 people max under any condition. Although that wasn't implied in this instance, it doesn't really look like it's going to need to be, because I doubt they're going to get 1,000 people there. Rossi is stating they want to do 2 to 3 events a year at Black Lake, and it may be something like, you know, Taste of the Central Coast wine tasting and local restaurants and produce, and another one might be a country western concert, and another one might be an act like Los Lobos. So they're going to try and match the activity that they intend with the demographics that the people who live at the golf course represent. So I think it'll work out all right. At least I haven't seen any red flags from my perspective. The Sheriff's Office and the County Health Agency is going to begin their compliance for tobacco checks next month. There's a county ordinance, which I can actually give you. It's County Ordinance 8.23.190. It was passed in 2008. And it requires that the Sheriff's Office and the Health Agency work together and do compliance checks at businesses that sell tobacco, and it's geared towards making sure tobacco is not sold to minors. It involves using a decoy program, so we would take a minor in. Deputy Sheriff would be present to observe. The minor would go and attempt to buy tobacco, and then if they were sold tobacco, then the deputy identifies himself, would take enforcement action, which usually results in a citation. If there is no sale made, then it's recorded, and the county health agency, a few weeks later, will send a postcard to the owner of that business that there was a decoy operation, that they successfully completed it, thanking them for making sure their staff's aware of the laws regarding sale of tobacco to minors. Not only, if you're the business owner, not only do you not want to get your employees to receiving citations for selling it, but you also don't want to get us nosing around your licensing, because it turns out that in addition to a business license, that you have to have a tobacco sales license from the State Board of Equalization, and there is a county tobacco resale license that you have to obtain through the county tax collector. And the county health agency, when they've been doing their education program the last few months, have determined that there's a lot of businesses that didn't obtain these two licenses. And of course, they pointed it out to them, and we're trusting that they have gone and obtained them. But if we have to take an enforcement action in the business, the deputy's going to be instructed to check for the three licenses required, and that could create additional complications for the business owner. And finally, Under Sheriff Martin Baskin retired on Friday, April 20th. And Under Sheriff Tim Olivas was sworn in on Monday, April 23rd. Under Sheriff Olivas is the former chief of Morro Bay Police Department. He worked for California Fish and Game as a game warden. He attained the rank of captain with State Fish and Game before leaving there to become the chief of Morro Bay. He and his wife and family lived on the Central Coast all the way back to when he and his wife were both Cal Poly students, and they are both Cal Poly graduates, so they're longtime residents, and we're looking forward to having him on the department.
And what was his last name?
Olivas, O-L-I-V-A-S. If you have any questions, I'm free to take them.
This is a loaded question, so I apologize, but do you have any idea how long Martin was actually on the
32 and a half years.
How many?
32 and a half years. So, and I mean, it's a loss in the sense that he was, you know, on all the time, totally committed to whatever community he worked in and the community he lived in. He's a member of the Elks, he's been a member of the Rotary and the Kiwanis for years. And, you know, talking to him about what's your retirement plans, it's pretty much, you know, he's walked away from the sheriff's office and is going to replace that with traveling in his RV, but I think he's really stepping up his commitment to Rotary and to the Elks and all of a lot of community things that he was involved in previously. So we hope to see him around a lot more, you know, out and about instead of stepping in the office.
Right, because he was the commander of the South County Sheriff's Office and then the general for a while, and we got to know him quite well.
Yeah, he was here in Oceano. He was the commander in Los Osos for a number of years. He was the detective division commander at one time. He was the civil division. I mean, he worked pretty much every place that he could work. I mean, you know, when I first started, he was a detective in narcotics. And I remember seeing him, he looked like one of those Muppet characters because he had so much hair, you know. And, and he was reminded of that at his retirement party when some pictures came out.
Just a couple things. You mentioned that in the other case that you got the fact you haven't got the defense yet. Is it virtually impossible, or how successful can you be to shut down defenses?
It's difficult because, I mean, a lot of times what they've done is they've taken it and they've traded it for drugs. And so you're going to go to the house, knock on the door, and you don't know anything about this. No, I don't know anything about it. And you can't really obtain a warrant just on the word of the crook who were just arrested alone. So the best you can do is you pass that information along to our special operation unit. They can try to either use informants to make drug purchases, or they can set up surveillances and try and monitor activity and enough information for a warrant under those circumstances. You know, the other tools we have is you check for parole, probation terms on these people, see if there's a way inside the residence legally. But sometimes you just write it down, file it for future reference, and it's going on.
Next, you talk about a potential law to put a cap of 1,000 on public events. Mm-hmm. And do you know who's sort of heading up that effort?
I'm not certain. The discussion that the CDF battalion chief, the discussion he had was after an event that had occurred last year at Avalor Bay Resort, where there was apparently a problem because there was a younger crowd, a younger act, and there were just too many people acting too obnoxiously, and it got out of hand. After that event, there were questions from the board of supervisors directed towards CDF about, in your role as a fire marshal, what would be a safe number, you know, for that venue or any outdoor venue? I mean, because there were problems getting emergency services in, and once they got in, it was difficult to deal with the people. And so where the number or the figure of 1,000 came up, I'm not sure. And it's not that there's any ordinance before the board, and I don't know that they were even looking to do an ordinance, because the fire marshal, I think in his own capacity, can simply say 1,000 is what I'm going to allow.
It would be useful to have conversations with the fire marshal before he drops the hammer. I'm thinking, for example, you have to do it fairly if you're going to enforce it.
Right.
And you have the county fair certainly has more than 1,000 every year.
Right.
A poly sports event has more than 1,000. They're in the unincorporated county outside the city limits. We have open house at Cal Poly. We just had one last week, which you guys may or may not have been involved in, but that's an issue. There are beach events that take place, say, on the 4th of July, and other such things that are clearly, at least some of them are in unincorporated areas. So it seems to me that any sort of ruling that you make is going to have to be limited very carefully, not to simply eliminate a lot of things that do happen annually here in the town.
Yeah, and as I said, I don't think, and was not given the impression from his comments that this was anything that the board was taking up themselves, but they were kind of asking him, what's your threshold? What's your comfort level as the fire marshal?
So I'm sure the fire marshal doesn't want to get the situation where he permits the ones he likes and he doesn't permit the ones he doesn't like.
Right, right.
That's awkward too.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, on the one hand, I don't know if you can come up with a consistent, hard and fast rule that this is the maximum number we would allow, because there's going to be some venues that simply by their size wouldn't, you know, you'd be reasonable to say, okay, look, you can't sell more than 1,000 tickets for this because the roads are going to get jammed up, I can't get fire engines and ambulances in, and, you know, you have medical emergencies and overcrowding, you can't get to them. So, I mean, I think a certain level of discretion has to be left to the fire marshal to decide.
But the jazz festival and the classic parlor things at Pismo, that's inside incorporated cities, which is not a problem. In the street events in Avalo, for example, are in the unincorporated county.
Right.
And they can be 2,000 or 3,000 sometimes.
Right.
So, again, I would be curious as to how any ruling is made to make sure that we don't.
Okay.
You know, I understand his concerns, they're very real and legitimate.
Okay.
Was there any further information on that attempt to break in on Camino Roadway the other day?
No.
Somebody jimmied the bathroom window and the alarm went off and the sheriffs were called. They came, by the time they got there, there was no evidence of anybody being there.
Yeah, the only information on that one that I've gotten was that they had checked the area for no tire prints, shoe prints in the immediate area. They didn't have any other leads. We had a case on the other side of the Mesa, on the Arroyo Grande side, that occurred in the middle of last week. That it's a sensitive case I won't go into, but it did involve an entry and a sexual assault that occurred. I don't know that there's any connection between the two. Unless we're investigating the crime that occurred. Worry grand, but it is kind of odd today.
Yeah, I don't hear many forced entries.
Mm-hmm. No, pretty rare actually. Usually it's window smashes on automobiles or people leaving their garage doors open and getting ready to walk it off.
Okay, thanks. Oh, one more question. The event at Black Lake, so it'll be 1,000 people. I assume that's going to be an outdoor event?
Yeah, it's outdoors on the, I would call it the south side of the clubhouse between Willow Road and the club. clubhouse along those lakes. Parking is going to be on the driving range. One of the concerns I have, we expressed to Rossi Enterprises, and they've addressed it, is, you know, off-street parking. You can have a lot of folks that decide, well, I'm not going to be in with all the other parkers on the parking lot. I'll park on one of the surface streets, especially in the Crown Point neighborhood, because it gets so close to the venue. And that tends to upset neighbors when, you know, their friends don't have a place to park or their driveways get blocked. Miller Events, which provides the security and EMTs, they're going to post people at the entrances to those neighborhoods to direct traffic in the right direction. And residents and visitors will be admitted in, but it's just an actual safeguard to keep things quiet in the neighborhoods.
When is that event, by the way?
May 6th.
Okay. Are there any comments? Good to see you. Okay, next item.
Thank you, President Harrison. Next up, we had Italian Chief Joe Fisher, and he was obviously unable to attend today. We correspond and give him a heads up that he'd be on our agenda. And I will give a follow-up call to him, because I think we've missed him now last few quarters, so make arrangements to have him come at another time. And then our next then would be our superintendent, Tina Greetings, to take us through her activity report and introduce us to the Christmas employee.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board, members of staff, and members of the public. I'm Tina Greetings, superintendent, and I want to introduce our most recent employee, Francisco Maldonado. He started a couple of weeks ago as a customer service representative. He comes to us with 5 years in the military, in the Marines, as an electronics technician for all in-craft, in-flight aircraft, and has been home in the home for the last 4 years working with military disabled adults. So he comes to us with a wide range of skills.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Well, we will now have somebody who, when they open an electrical control panel, will understand what you're looking at.
Absolutely.
Hallelujah.
January through December each year. this last month, in addition to the water and wastewater monthly report preparation, I also worked on and completed the annual water report that was prepared for the California Department of Health Services. And I also assisted in the preparation of the annual consumer confidence report that is going to be sent out to district customers and to the Department of Health Services. It is now has gone to the printer, and it will be sent out in the water bills in May and June of this year. We're continuing with the SCADA upgrade. It's still in the planning and design stages, and it's not scheduled to be completed until sometime this summer. We have been having problems with our IPAC system, most recently with yesterday, but fortunately this time no ill effects occurred as a result. We had monitored the computer system and wells in the lift stations and the water tanks throughout the evening, and we were able to receive alarms again this morning. So for 24 hours, we weren't receiving alarms again. But I did contact the can company, and they were right on it and helped us. We were able to resolve the problem again this time. So looking forward to the new SCADA system coming on board. We did have a inspection of the laboratory in the early part of April for our environmental laboratory accreditation program. We participated in performance testing of the three analyses that we want the certification in: the several solids, the fine residual, and the pH. And we're submitting all of our documentation to the state of California for their final review and approval for the certification of the lab. And so those are the highlights of this last month. Do you have any questions?
No. Let's see. Come on, surprise. Okay, good. I noticed there's a bill for this month for $3,000 to the County Public Works for sewer inspection. What does the county, why do we have to have the county inspect our sewer?
I'm not sure I know that.
The county, as far as our public works projects, treats us like any other developer. They bring us under a cost recovery program, and then they inspect our compliance with their right-of-way permit for us to operate in South Furnace Road. And so whenever the county inspector is out, they bill hours.
But what did they do for $3,000? That's
well, without Peter here to break down their exact, covering what period that invoice covers and how much time on site. I know as we wrap up the South Frontage project, and of course we're doing that notice of completion today, there was then quite a bit of inspection of the asphalt. I know the final steps of that process were for us to come back in and asphalt back in our trench area and, bring it back into compliance with the county road there. So maybe I would expect that their inspector spent a lot of time in the final weeks of.
So it wasn't really sewer inspection, but road inspection or something?
Right. They're inspecting for compliance with their, their right of way agreement.
Okay. Yeah, I noticed a lot of reports to the state. I was just curious as to why the county was looking at our sewer.
Right, so it's applying for their encroachment permit is the right term. They issue us an encroachment permit, of course, and then they're inspecting for compliance with that.
Okay. There you go, person.
Yeah. With regards to the Black Lake wastewater treatment facility, how we had a couple of liners replaced, within my lifetime, anyway, recent lifetime. Are the other ones still looking pretty good? Or?
They are still looking pretty good at this time. We have put in a budget and amount of money this next fiscal year for a sewer master plan. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be looking at the wastewater plant and the sewer system in the Wadley area this next year if it's approved.
Great. Yeah, I saw that. I think that's a good thing. We need a separate master plan out there. The other question I had was when you put in an acronym like ELAP, I think that I remembered at one time what that stood for, but it's beyond me now, so
yes, maybe having... Yes, I apologize. It stands for the Environmental Laboratory Accreditation Program.
Okay. Either that or we sort of compile a list of commonly used acronyms in this kind of business, and then all the directors get a copy so they can look it up.
I have such a copy, but in the state of California, it's 3/4 inch thick on both sides of the paper.
Yes, it sounds like the ones for aerospace. You know.
Physical go and inspect the things to make sure that the scale system is sending information.
We physically inspect water tanks twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays, but we check our scale system daily. We have an on-call operator 7 days a week who checks the scale system in the morning and in the afternoon. And since the last time the water tanks overflowed, we actually send ourselves alarms daily.
I think that's good for all of the facilities that have its data system on it. It'd be like a self-test. You push self-test button or something like that, and it goes through the whole shebang, stimulates alarms to make sure that they wind up on your screen.
We're definitely on top of the testing of the alarms daily. We don't want that to happen again. And, you know, it was one thing that was drinking water, but it would be horrible if it was sewage. Mm-hmm. So, we're just hoping the new scale will come along soon.
Where'd you find out about the water tanks and the water producing information on standby from the internal testing? I noticed that
you said... Oh, the report? We just received the report from the standpipe inspection. Have not reviewed it yet. And the water tank coating inspection is going on right now. The Harper engineering company is up at the water tanks as we speak. They started at 8 o'clock this morning.
Okay, so I thought you already done the water tanks and you were going to do the standpipe. Okay.
Yeah, we did this standpipe last month.
Okay, so you understand if you haven't reviewed that?
I have not reviewed the report, it just came in.
But there wasn't any major things that caught your eye and hadn't been done yet?
I have not reviewed
it. You took a tour of the Guadalupe wastewater treatment facility?
Yes.
What's the capacity of the facility?
I couldn't answer that question.
This is probably no. Very similar to the capacity of our shopping plant. They're at 0.9 million gallons per day.
And they're putting in a BioLac system, and that's the reason why we wanted to tour, was to see the construction and see how they're
going. Yeah, the numbers to get a hold of someone out there, some of us wanted to go through that facility.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. President.
Michael, we'll start with you.
Thank you. Let's see. It's next Tuesday, May 1st. There will be no meeting of Board of Supervisors. And so that will be a light week. If you need to contact staff on Monday, they actually will be available. That's usually not the case. On May 2nd, at 1:30, the RAP will be meeting. There are a number of things on the agenda. We're going to be looking at the bylaws, reviewing those in some detail, not every single item. We'll be looking at the 2012-2013 Public Works budget. We'll be looking at an update for the earworm, Integrated Regional Water Management Plan. And we're going to be looking at the Los Osos sewer disposal system and whether there are any countywide policy implications of that. Some people thought there might be, other people thought there weren't, so we'll take it from there. That'll be this next Wednesday at 1:30. There also will be a meeting of a focus group. We'll meet with SLOCOG that same day at 4 o'clock from 4 to 5. I've been asked to attend and to talk about transportation for the South County. So I'm not exactly sure where what will come out of that meeting, but I'll report back to you once I know. May 3rd, Thursday, will be the RAC subcommittee will be meeting about the earworm management. And so far as I can tell, the county has shifted from an original idea to have some small group in the RAC, maybe 8 or 9 people, make decisions about who would get funding from the state for water and sewer projects. And that is one of the ways it can be done, is being done in the state. Ventura County, for example, does it that way, and there's others too. But we're proposing to go the other opposite direction, whereas everybody that's in the RAC would be that group in the vote. We'll have some regional subcommittees that will vet the initial project applications and then send them on with recommendations to the RAC. Anyway, that's not final yet, clearly, but that will be discussed in subcommittee on the 3rd. May 18th, there will be our usual bi-monthly CSDA meeting. That's a California Special Districts Association, the county chapter thereof. And it's going to be meeting at 11:30 on the 18th in San Luis Obispo, but not at John Wallace's offices. And they were going to send out the address of the new meeting place, and I haven't received a copy yet, but my computer's down and won't be up till later this afternoon. So if staff have anything there, you do need to follow up. It's
right, it's the contract operator for San Simeon, I think.
Exactly.
I can't remember that. It was based on the location, but I'll get that information.
They have an office in San Luis Obispo with a meeting room. That's
yes.
Where that is, but I don't know. And then last
what day is that, Mike?
Pardon?
What day is that?
That's the 18th. May 18th. Which is back to a Friday again. And then last, just a reminder again, on June 22nd, the RAC will be sponsoring a day-long informational forum on hydraulic fracturing or fracking. And that will be held in the Board of Supervisors chambers all day that day. Be videotaped by AGP. We're still talking to people who will be coming and presenting. There's no county, there's no project in the county that's related to this, nothing that's in the process now or anything you've anticipated. But it's sort of trying to get ahead of the curve to understand what, if any, the impact would be on the groundwater if we have fracking in this county, particularly since we have a fairly large distribution of Monterey shales, which typically is a place where natural gas or some production is possible. So There'll be no ordinances or recommendations coming out of it, but it will be information that will be open to the public, and I'm trying to get the word out about it now.
Good. Yes, on April 17th, LAFCO met and voted a resolution and findings to formally deny the Los Robles del Mar annexation based on water, lack of sufficient water supplies in the city of Pismo Beach. The proponents apparently didn't get the message and argued that it should have been passed because we were doing land use thing. Land use wasn't the issue, it was water, and there was plenty of outside information about to support the fact that they had under certain conditions, had a water shortage, water shortfall, even to provide to non-annex properties. So that finding was found correct and voted, and it was, I can't remember, I think it was, there were two dissensions, but it still passed. On April 18th, there was a meeting at the Woodlands where the Woodlands Ventures and Shea Homes announced that they were voting their shares on the Supplemental Water Assessment District in support of the assessment district, and that amounted to approximately 500 benefit units from Woodlands Ventures and 150 to 200 Shea Homes. I don't know if they voted those in or not, or if they voted mail those in yet or not, but they announced their intention. And that's all I have.
Derek? Yes, on April 17th, Kerry Wagner and myself attended the Black Lake Management Association meeting. The topic was how to vote their 13.95 benefit units. Ensued was about an hour of questions and answers from both Kerry and myself. And we were, quote, patted on the back for giving good answers, clear, concise, so on and so forth. The vote was 3 yes, 6 no. For the 13.95 benefit units, so they voted their benefit units no. May 2nd, there is a webinar offered by CSDA on sexual harassment prevention training. So, and since we as directors are considered employees of the district by the IRS, we get to take. So just want to let you know, if you've got a couple hours to sit in front of the computer on May 2nd, you can register now and have that under your belt, so to speak. That's a Wednesday. Next. I just want to let you know.
What time of day are you
doing? That I don't know. I did not. If you click on to register, I'm sure it'll give you the time to log on and so on and so forth.
If I click on the not registering, will I still find out the time?
That I don't know. Yes, you will.
And where do you click the report?
CSDA sends out a newsletter every week, Monday news, for the following week. And it's in there and it says, click here. But I just want to let you know it's out there because it is something we all have to face up to. And that's all I had in serious terms.
Okay, there's a walk for life at the Bowman High School this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, 24 hours for breast cancer. The news is interesting. There's a lunch at the Seattle County Country Club from the 8th for various parts of Alzheimer's. And there's a spaghetti dinner with the barn this Friday night to raise money for the Elks Queen County. The Dana Adobe has a program this weekend to look at the maps that they found and had restored the map for mid-1800s, and then $10 to get a LiDAR errors and land it. So that's out there this weekend also. That's all I have. Now, I'm going to receive public comment on presentations and reports presented under item C. Seeing none now, we'll ask for a motion to receive and file presentations on reports.
So moved, Mr. Harrison.
And second?
Second.
Discussion? Marie, call the roll, please.
Director Verhaelen.
Yes.
Director Eby.
Yes.
Director Lynn.
Yes.
And Director Harrison.
Yes. Now we have the consent calendar.
Yes, President Harrison, if I may introduce a few items. We have our regular board meeting minutes from April 11th, of course. Our quarterly financial report and the quarterly investment report, which continue to show us that this is the investment report, that there's not a lot to be made out there on investments these days. We have our warrants, of course. I jumped right over those. I just want to highlight we have some warrants that are showing, obviously, that we are doing quite a bit of work on both the waterline intertie project, finalizing that design, and the Southland Wastewater Treatment Facility upgrade and the AECOM. We have an invoice there, or a warrant for $44,000 nearly. Page two, you'll see where R. Baker, and this is one of our, I don't know if it's our final payment, I think maybe, I think there may be some remnant payment here at the end. It's about $70,000, and this is wrapping up the South Frontage Road Sewer Trunk Project. And then with the Lawless Group, as we've been out in the ballot and moving through the balloting process, $75,000 expended just in that support alone. And then finally, I'll highlight in the packet, of course, the item B5, the South Frontage Road, Truer Trunk Sewer Project Acceptance. Thank you. And I have on our board over here to the side just our final budget numbers and the fact that this project really went smoothly. Our contractor was outstanding, helped us out along the way to minimize change orders and bring private costs in at 13% under budget. I will lay an explanation that Peter's out in hell this week, or else he'd be here. Obviously, this is a milestone day for what is the first in the number of major capital projects we're underway with here. So, with that, staff's not going to answer any questions the board might have on the consent agenda.
Okay, is there anyone who wants to pull any item from the consent agenda?
No.
I just have a quick comment on D2. It doesn't need to be
okay, and that was my next thing. Do you have any comments on any of the items on the consent agenda?
I just want to commend staff for your minutes. Minutes are something that have to make sense when you go back to them a month or two or a year later to see if you understand what happened. These are very well done. They're not only deliberate, but they're very concise, and they express the actions were taken, which is the kind of minutes we have, and I appreciate it.
Good. The only thing I want to say is that I wasn't here for the April 11th meetings, therefore, can we do the motion? Let's do a separate motion for that. So I don't intend to vote on it here. I'll repeat 2 minutes.
Or can he just stipulate his vote on that item?
There's a variety of methods to address that issue. One, of course, is to separate the motions out. It's a perfectly acceptable way. The other one is just for when Marie calls the roll call for the director to report an abstention on whatever agenda item it is based on lack of attendance.
That's my opinion. There's still the next one, if there's a right. Ask for a motion.
Move approved as submitted.
I'll second that.
A motion and a second. Any discussion? All right, and the recall roll.
Do you have public comment?
Oh, public comment is, any public comment on the consent agenda? The recall roll.
Director Wynn.
Yes.
Director Verhaeghe.
Yes.
Director Eadie.
Yes.
And Director Harrison.
Yes, with the exception of the two, I wasn't present for that meeting. Our next item of business.
Thank you, President Harrison. Next item of business, before I introduce, I will point out that there's an addendum sheet, a yellow sheet for this item, and John will walk us through changes to the resolution in this moment. This is consideration of a supplemental water project addendum, environmental impact report, and your board authorized a preparation of this report to address changes and additions to the supplemental water project. The final environmental impact report for the supplemental water project was certified on April 22, 2009, and was based on preliminary engineering design, and now we're bringing design to the final point and readying the project for construction. Is it appropriate time to consider the need for an addendum to the environmental, to the final environmental impact report? So we have contracted Wood and worked with Mr. Doug Wood to prepare the supplemental work here to our final environmental impact report, and Mr. Wood's here today to walk us through this addendum. I'm looking for Mr. He's making final notes and ready for this presentation. So.
Mr. President, members of the board, my name is Douglas Wood. I'm principal of the firm of Douglas Wood and Associates, Inc., with our primary office in San Luis Obispo. Our firm, as you know, prepared not only this addendum EIR, but the original final EIR that was certified by your board for the overall supplemental water project. Although the final EIR really isn't the subject of today's hearing, that's been certified and that's part of the public record. The addendum EIR, which is the subject of today's hearing, was prepared in order to address certain changes and additions to the supplemental water project that occurred subsequent to the certification of the final EIR, in order to ensure complete coverage of the entire project by the regulations and guidelines of the California Environmental Quality Act. According to the CEQA guidelines, an addendum EIR can be prepared, and I'm quoting now, when minor technical changes or additions to the previously certified EIR are necessary. If no substantial changes to the proposed project or circumstances surrounding the project occur, and if there are no new or more severe project impacts or significantly different mitigation measures from those in the previously certified final EIR. So that is the guideline that the CEQA regulations or guidelines offer in order to direct us to the proper type of document that's necessary. And after preparation of the addendum EIR, with all of its investigations and conclusions, it appears that this is the proper approach. Now, the additional changes, just very briefly, involve three basic items. One is the provision of a maximum of 8 temporary lay-down areas, construction yards, throughout the areas of future construction of the project. The second is the reconfiguration of the Via Concha well site, primarily involving expansion, I guess, of an easement area to allow construction equipment to come in and construct an additional structure for the chloramination facilities that need to be added. Get that one right. The third item involves the upsizing of the Phase 1 Blosser Road pipeline from 18 to 24 inches, and as a result of that, eliminating the need for any additional pipeline installation in phase three of the project as was previously described in the prior EIR. So in other words, the larger pipeline will be installed in phase one and eliminating the need for any subsequent construction in phase three. That's the primary difference between the final EIR and the facilities that are described in the addendum. The addendum EIR considered the impacts of constructing the 24-inch line in phase one and concluded that in terms of this facility, as well as the other two items, there were no new or increased impacts as a result of this change. In fact, it eliminated any future construction of a replacement pipeline or an additional pipeline in phase three. And in this case, we found that that was, in fact, a beneficial impact, a class four. You don't see those very often, but when they come up, give credit to where it's due. So in that respect, the change in the Blosser Road pipeline is perceived as a beneficial impact in terms of the overall impacts of the project. They won't have to go back and dig another trench along Blosser Road in the future. Section 2 of the addendum provides a summary of the conclusions that were the result of the investigations from the addendum EIR. And if I may, it states that none of the currently proposed additional project facilities, those three items that I just discussed, none of those represent a substantial change to the supplemental water project as currently approved. None of them result in new or more severe project impacts as compared to those impacts described in the previously certified final EIR. And none of those facilities result in the need for significantly different mitigation measures from those contained in the previously certified final EIR. As a result of the analyses and impact assessments contained within the addendum, the additional project facilities do not constitute substantial changes to the supplemental water project and will not require any revisions to the previously certified final EIR. I feel very strongly that it's the proper approach to stay ahead of these things and make sure that as you proceed forward on this project, that you have complete CEQA coverage on all of the different facets of the project, be they facets or facilities that were part of the final EIR discussion, but also the additional facilities that are now part of the overall project package. I'm here this morning to answer any questions you may have on the document or any questions or issues that come up during the ensuing discussion of this item.
Very good question.
Yes, Mr. Wood, on page 39, which is a description of project characteristics, the very last paragraph says supplemental water project will require a maximum of 8 temporary laydown areas.
That's pretty clear, man.
3-9. Roman numeral 3-9. Then on Roman numeral 3-10, I only counted 7. It says in the verbiage that there should be 4 along Blosser Road.
Yes,
and identified.
And an additional laydown area, actually, it's, if you see that the top one,
it has two,
right, lines. And it shows the area of the trenching for the pipeline, which mm-hmm. is on the east side of the road. Mm-hmm. That's considered the 8th laydown.
Okay, right. Just wanted clarification.
I understand. The numbers there are a little confusing. I apologize for that.
I was looking for squares or rectangles. Or
right.
Thank you.
And again, this is a maximum. It may not all be used.
Right.
But we wanted to maintain as much flexibility and options for the district so that you could do the construction and things the most efficient way possible.
To be honest with you, that was the only item I have.
Yeah, this Blosser upsizing of the pipeline is still an option, is that correct?
Correct.
It's stated in here as though it's a fact. In fact, on page 3-13, it says the current proposed additional project facility involved an upsizing of the phase one Blosser water line from 18 to 24 inches. is it more correct to say involve a possible upsizing? Or potential upsizing?
If I may, I could point out that in the last sentence, we say most of which will be constructed within phase three if implemented. Now, ideally, probably that should have been pointed out in those terms at the beginning of the paragraph. And I think there are other references in the document that put it in those same terms. Okay. But I don't disagree with the need for clarification.
I just wanted to make it clear that there are going to be bid options that provide for an 18-inch pipeline or a 24-inch pipeline, and after those options can't come in is when we decide that is the fact. So this EIR just covers the potential that we choose 24-inch instead of the 18. So it covers our impact in advance.
In the event of.
Right.
You still identified lay down areas which weren't previously identified, so that still stands whether you go with 18 or 24. Yep.
You didn't need this. You still have coverage for all eight of those lay down areas. Yeah. You I would assume that whatever pipeline goes in at that location in phase one, there's a good chance that we are going to be using that trench area as a lay down area. So. It covers that eventuality, even if it's an 18-inch line that goes into phase one instead of 24.
If we do the 24, that just means there's less environmental impact on that section of our pipeline.
And that's why you have a class four assessment, at least in terms of construction impact.
And we don't have to shell out more money.
There's obviously cost savings. We don't get into the environmental side, but that's obviously, I think that's the case, what I understand.
My wallet is always.
Anything more?
No, I just wanted to make that point that this is.
It's a potential.
It has not been decided.
Right? Yeah, it's an option.
Right?
Nothing substantial. I have a hyphen missing in a couple of comments, so that I probably can show those to you afterwards.
That's surprising.
I'm a tremendous shock.
There's one thing in the agenda that bothers me. I was not aware that we were bringing in any water for the sphere of influence. Mm-hmm. On page VI.
In phase one, we don't.
Four, eight.
Room number 4-8.
Room number 4-8. It says the project involves an increase of water in order to reduce the current imbalance of groundwater levels to serve new developments consistent with the South County area planning within the current boundaries of the Baltimore Human Service District and its sphere of influence, which are located adjacent to the boundaries. I didn't know we were bringing in any water for our sphere of influence, inside our boundaries.
Our current project is not.
Current project, no. Nothing for the sphere. If the second and later is implemented, and that was Ed's point, it's not decided to do that. But if we did, it would not be paid for by our residents, and it would be for development within the sphere of influence.
And also, if I may point out, that's a quote from the previously certified final EIR, which took a far more global approach to the overall project than what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
It was provided as some background as to where this issue came from in the first place. And also, I thought it was important that we provide that background, because in the previous final EIR, the land use impacts associated with the overall project were considered a class one or unavoidable adverse impact. So I felt as though it was important to have that as a backdrop. However, these additional project facilities are not
considered growth inducing because it's the importation of the water that creates that class one impact. And that was addressed in the final EIR. What we're talking about in this addendum are the specific impacts related to the three additional facilities that weren't part of the plan before. That's why I mentioned at the beginning the issues that were treated in the previous final EIR really aren't the subject of this addendum. This addendum focuses in exclusively on those three additional project facilities. So that's the nature of the quote in there. Hopefully that answers at least the rest of the concern.
I'm taking a look at, I think this is IV-7 and top of IV-8.
Yes.
Take a look at the bottom on IV-7, where it says impact B-2. And then take a look at the last sentence on that paragraph. It's a proposed project. It does, however, involve the provision. Would it be okay to just insert the proposed project phase 3 if approved? Does, however, involve the provision? If that is a phase 3 project.
Correct. At least in terms of how it was addressed in the final EIR.
Yeah, so I just.
But this is a quote from the EIR.
I don't know if
it. Yeah, look at the word project.
Quotes open twice.
But we can break the quotes and put in a, not a parentheses, but a bracket for clarification.
Right. I'm just pointing out if you wanted to have a clarification that this is part of phase 3 and phase 3 has to be come back before the board for approval at some future date, we may add some clarification in response to Mr. President Harrison's question.
I have no problem with that clarification. It doesn't change the meaning of anything, but it does provide, like I say, a little more clarity on that quote. Because I hate to see that taken out of context and,
Oh, you will be. It should have
happened. I still hate to see that happen.
It has been.
You got a mismatch quote started there.
Yeah, we should do that then.
Not a problem.
Make me more comfortable. How does that sound?
As well as the addition on 3-13 that the commissioner would be brought up, we can put that into the final document, as well as any other clarifications that come up through the public discussion.
Okay. I really don't have any other thing.
Just to point out in terms of secret procedures, any input that's received at a public hearing on a document, if integrated into the document, becomes part of the final document. So even what we say today is similar to any other kind of input. And, it's not too late to shape the document, so to speak.
I just want to clarify in there that the first thing is that we're going through is not for anything other than also that I'm present with this. And if we're going to increase in our sort of intervals, that would be the third phase of the process.
Right.
So if we did that, that would be kind of meaningful. Right.
Would make it crystal clear.
Anything else, guys? Thank you, Doug.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Thanks. Now, are there any public comment on this? I guess you want to walk through it.
Yes, my name is John Snyder. First of all, if you want something quoted correctly, you ought to have your quotes matching. You got mismatching quotes on the bottom of IV-7 and IV-8 on the quote we're just talking about. My concern is growth inducing impacts. I just heard that there's none in the phase 1-2 projects for outside the district boundaries in the sphere of influence. But if I'm not mistaken, the pipe under the river is for 6,200 acre feet, and now you're talking about sizing potentially a pipe for the connection to San Maria at that same size.
I've been here in the past where a person wants to, say, connect to your system out on a piece of property that doesn't have a pipe out in front of the street. You have to run the large main down the street, maybe pass some undeveloped properties, and then at a later time, as people develop those properties and hook up to that line, there's a process whereby monies are, I'll say, rebated or returned to the original person who paid for the larger pipe on the street, because, say, for example, five people are actually connecting up to that pipe rather than just the guy who pays for it. And since you essentially have existing customers paying for 6,000 acres of pipe on the river, and now potentially a pipe that's larger between San Marino and the river pipe, I'm wondering whether there's a similar recovery of costs for the existing people who are paying for the 6,200 acre foot pipe that will be refunded from the future development to cover that pipe. And I think that needs to be considered in the gross inducing potential environmental impacts in this study.
Thank you. There you go. It's nice to hear from someone who's litigating against
you. Yeah, it's not nice to be having you litigate against me.
There's any other public comment? Seeing none?
A couple things if I may, President Harrison. Just a will remind the board that this section of pipe road that we're talking about in Blossom Road, that bid package is completely funded by the Department of Water Resources grant at $2.3 million. And so the cost spread is actually a different on this section relative to our overall project. And of course, we're just talking about a timing issue as far as the upsizing of the pipe. So
we're also talking about saving money, but not having to reopen the whole place.
Thank you, sir. Yes. The bid option as it stands is $500,000 bid option. The estimate, if we went back in to do the project at a future date, would take it right back to the $2.3 million estimate for basically opening up the road.
Or more.
Another
that time.
Or more. Future numbers are all apart to affirm.
I just think that's it before, not any time we discuss this, is that by putting in the larger pipe, and not waiting to some future date, we'll probably, no, we are saving money if we're going to put that pipe in anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's just the pipe in order to deliver the 6,300 acre feet a year, we still need to upgrade the pump station.
There's a lot of work that needs to be done.
What I'd like to tell you is a significant amount of plumbing would remain on our side of many millions of dollars.
Right.
But the good news is that we did, in fact, think about this when we did the original EIR. And in the program EIR, we actually looked at the growth and using impacts of the entire 6,200 acre feet, found it to be a class one impact, dealt with it according to CEQA then. So there's no new impact that wasn't previously announced.
Right.
There is no new impact for sure.
It's just saving money.
And now we did have the addendum sheets, and John had made an edit to the resolution, and I can walk us through that.
Thank you, Michael, the President, board members of the audience. First of all, I did prepare a quick little revision to E1, and basically just restates the conclusions and the findings that were reported by Mr. Wood related to that there is no new or significant environmental effects or a substantial increase in severity previously identified effects as a result of approving these projects. You can see those on 1A, B, and C. Additionally, listening to the comments of the board and the revisions that were proposed by staff, I've also taken this opportunity to suggest some revisions to the resolution. So if you follow along with me, we're looking at the 1, 2, 3, the third whereas, and this is basically a listing of the changes and additions that were analyzed as part of this environmental process. We're taking a look at number 3 in that list. Suggest modifying it to read as follows. The upsizing of the currently proposed Phase 1 pipeline extension adjacent to Blosser Road from 18 to 24 inches as a, this is where I insert, as a bid alternative, because that's what it is. It's an alternative part of the project, and if approved, the elimination of the Phase 3 additional 18-inch parallel. I think that's what's contemplated here is that we would have the bid at 18 and a bid alternative, and the idea is if it comes in under the grant funding, we would go for it, right? That's sort of the,
that is.
Object there. And then going on to page 2, now therefore be it resolved, determined, and ordered, taking a look at paragraph 2 of the order, the Board of Directors approves the addendum to the Environmental Impact Report, Exhibit A, and then we insert as amended. Just to reflect that you are, that you, now, that means that I'm assuming that there will be 3 votes to include those amendments, or a minimum 3 votes to approve those amendments as reviewed by Mr. Wood and myself to the addendum itself, and then go on to read in compliance with the California Environmental Quality Act.
Mr. President, just for some additional clarity on those revisions, there is, and I knew there was, there's a similar quote on page 4-7, or that we made on 4-7. It's also necessary on 4-4. Quote a different portion of the final EIR, but it's the same language in the land use section. If you go down to the second to last paragraph, right under impact E-2 on Roman numeral 4-4 of numbers. You'll see in that first paragraph under impact A-2, the same parenthetical break needs to be applied there also, where we will stop the quote in brackets, say Phase 3 if approved, and then continue the quote again. It's identical to what we're doing on 4-7. But for the record, those would be 2 revisions, as well as the 3rd revision that Mr. Deeby requested on page 3-11.
4-4?
4-4 is identical to the change that would be on 4-7.
What paragraph is that
on? Second to the last paragraph. Where in the middle of it says the project does, and we'll put in the same change there that we did on 4-7. And then the 3rd is the addition of the words possible on the last paragraph of 3-13, which is the Commissioner Eby's suggested revision, which basically does the same thing.
Yes.
So those would be the 3 revisions to the document, and if approved by the board, we will run revised copies for their record.
And 13 corrections of punctuation and such. That should formulate and not substantially.
These will all be incorporated into the final document, and as well as any other changes that come up before your decision. Thanks again.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Do you need a comment in the board?
I just have one comment. There's been an argument presented that that I think it had to do with reimbursement. Future reimbursement of people who benefit from the pipeline in the future. That to me is an economic issue, not an EIR issue. It doesn't deserve any consideration in what we're talking about today.
Yeah, just for the history of it. This is a grant funding. What we're talking about is an option, is a bid alternative or an option for the board to approve, number one. And so we've, I think what staff would probably respond to is that there isn't any more associated costs to our future or existing residents. But even if you were to assume hypothetically that there could be, this clearly could be addressed as part of your AD 1600 fees for new development. So.
Moving to motion. I'm ready to make a motion. I move that we. I have comments.
Oh, the tour asked for comments and then we'll do the head.
Oh, I'm sorry.
There are comments, please, Mr. Mayor.
On the resolution, in addition to those that the Vernon Council pointed out, the first whereas has an embedded paragraph.
Yes.
And is that quoted in its entirety from the original?
I don't believe it is. I just believe it's a general description.
So this is a fresh summary, not a quoted.
You know, I'm not that creative, so I may well have quoted that either from the addendum itself or from another document, but quite frankly, I don't have a recollection. But this is just sort of keep in mind that the embedded quote or whatever it is just a summary of what we're incorporating. Of course, is the complete project description.
I don't understand. I was just wasn't clear to me. Sometimes when you bring in bulk margins and single space, you mean this is a long quote.
Right.
So you don't have quotation
marks. And I agree with that observation. It's just that I don't have a recollection.
Okay.
And whether or not I paraphrased a document or quoted it.
Okay. Then I have four changes to, again, to submit to staff, which again are punctuation. But I do have a question on page 3. Item number 6 says Plymouth Community Services District located at, goes on, as the lead agency, attention district general manager, is the custodian of the documents. I'm wondering whether attention district general manager belongs in that sentence.
I think
if it was a mailing address, of course that would be entirely proper. But if you're saying the lead agency is, do you include that?
I think that the CEQA guidelines requires you to designate a person as well as a location.
Okay, well, that answers my question. So I'll pass this around to staff and ask that you incorporate those statements. Don't make any changes on that last page.
No.
Read it?
Yeah.
Okay. I move that we adopt the resolution, the amended resolution as amended, including the amendments to the supplemental water project EIR addendum as amended.
Second.
Is there any public comments?
George, take a public
comment. Very good public comment. Okay. Call the roll.
Director Eby.
Yes.
Director Wynn.
Yes.
Director Verheiden.
Yes.
Director Harrison.
Yes. Yes. At this point, we're going to take a break. We'll reconvene in about 25 minutes.